This podcast is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Who took the bomb?
Hello and welcome to The Sus, the political podcast for the locked out generation. I'm Glenn Fitzpatrick, flying solo today as Steph continues to slay the beast that is the world of academia. This is our 34th episode, one which you will hopefully agree looks at what is a glaring gap in Irish law. All signs point to instances of racism and other forms of hatred being on the rise in Ireland and indeed across the globe. But to what extent is the justice system on the side of the victims in these cases? We've enlisted the help of Aga Visek, I hope I pronounced that right, I probably haven't, of the European Network Against Racism, the Ireland branch, to tell us exactly what a hate crime is, how the current laws are failing the marginalised and what needs to be done to address all of this. A little bit later then we'll also be talking to Owen Ryder and Alex Laplace about a personal trauma that may not have happened at all if such laws were in place to act as a deterrent. So I suppose, Aga, we'll jump straight within and start with you. So in a nutshell, could you maybe tell us what exactly is a hate crime and what distinguishes it from, say, a normal crime?
So hate crime, basically the police in Ireland defines hate crime as any violent act that is a crime and is listed in the criminal law in Ireland. So it can be theft, it can be harassment, it can be, you know, rape even, you know, if it's a biased act. But in definition of the guards, it's basically when the crime is perceived as a hate crime by the victim. So it's the responsibility of the victim while reporting to say that they think this was homophobic or racist crime.
Okay. So would that be then linked to, I know we have the Equality Act here in Ireland that talks about, you know, people not being, you can't discriminate against somebody on the basis of their gender or their race or their orientation. Is it linked to the Equality Act? Or?
No, it's not. Because you see, and that's the main problem that we see when, for example, victims are reporting something, they very often mix discrimination and crime. They are totally different things, you know. So you have equality law that deals with discrimination, and you have 9 different groups that are listed in that legislation. And it's basically referring to access to services and discrimination in the workplace. So, for example, if you are not allowed to, for example, go into the bar because of your skin color or because the way you look, because of, you know, real or perceived difference, and if you are treated worse than somebody else in the same situation because of who you are, then it's discrimination. But for example, if you're attacked on the street, or for example, your shop is being damaged and sprayed with racist slogans, or for example, you are being harassed by your neighbor, for example, then it's crime. So anything that is written in the law, in criminal law, that is already recognized as crime, and, you know, so it's murder, assault, harassment, theft, fraud, criminal damage, and has a biased motive, which means the bias is the hate element, then it's recognized as a hate crime. So people have to know where to go with which. Because if it's crime, you report it to the police. You don't report discrimination to the police. You report discrimination to Workplace Relations Commission. Even if it's access to services, it might be a bit misleading because people just don't, people mix the two, and sometimes they might go to the police to report discrimination, and the police might tell them, sorry, this wasn't a crime. And person, of course, the law was broken, but it's not criminal law. And very often police wouldn't tell you where to go with it, you know. So that's kind of the distinction that we have to remember.
Okay, so
in terms of racism or homophobia.
So it's fair to say then that what you would interpret as a hate crime is if the victim feels that the crime has been done on the basis of their race or their orientation or something.
Nationality,
like,
religion, ethnicity, it can be as well makeup of your family. So if you're a single parent, because you see that, sorry, that I'm mixing now discrimination with crime. So, you know, the ground, if the person is, for example, gay, lesbian, transgender, or, you know, they are from different ethnic group or, you know, religion comes into place, and they feel that attack was happening because of that, You know, it can be real or perceived as well, you know. So then it's a hate crime.
Okay, so if someone in present day Ireland is a victim of what they perceive to be a hate crime, is the justice system on their side in any way?
Well, you know, they can still report that crime as crime. You know, crime is always crime. Doesn't matter what was the motivation. You know, but there is no provision in Irish law to recognize the hate element. So, for example, you know, as we said, that it was a racist attack or homophobic attack, and the person was targeted because of who they are, and they believe that they were attacked because of who they are. You know, we would like the legislation to recognize that fact and provide certain supports in place. So, for example, the same as you have with the victims of gender-based violence. For example, violence against women. Women have, you know, special provisions of support. You know, once the victim is recognized, for example, there was a rape committed, you know, the woman has certain provisions and certain rights in court. For example, they don't have to face-to-face sit with the perpetrator. And we would like as well the legislation to recognize that it's a bit different, to recognize that bias element and provide the tools to the police, to the judges and prosecution to treat this crime, you know, with sensitivity of the characteristic of the victim as well.
So currently in the eyes of the law, there would be no difference in punishment for, say, for example, I mean, the one that comes to mind would be, I suppose, the George Bar when it was defaced with graffiti with Nazi symbolism a few years ago. Would that be just dealt with in the sense that it could have just been any sort of a defacement?
It would be just treated as damage to property or graffiti,
yeah,
you know?
Whereas if we had a hate crime legislation in place, the severity of the punishment would be, you would imagine, steeper and more severe on the basis that it was done for that biased reason?
Yeah, we would like this to be recognised, you know, that the fact that this was based on somebody's hate for a particular group, you know, because hate crime, you know, all the victims of crime suffer the same. But, you know, the thing is that with hate crime, the damage is done to personal identity, something that they cannot change, you know. So, you know, the hate crime legislation won't be, because when we talk about hate crime, people think, oh, this will be only for migrants or refugees. But no, it's not true, because it will also refer to people from different religious groups, people from ethnic minorities, people from LGBT community, people with disabilities, and also older people. You know, so all the groups that are perceived as more vulnerable, you know, will be included in it. And there is actually a coalition of organizations of NGOs working on the proposal, you know, of hate crime legislation that's been already ongoing, and, you know, we are lobbying for it. In our island is only one organization involved, you know, that we would like all these groups to be included in that, you know, in that legislation.
So this is the Coalition Against Hate Crime, is it?
Yes.
Yeah, so could you tell us maybe a little bit more about some of the work the Coalition is doing at the moment?
So Coalition, for example, you know, they work with Hate and Hostility Research Group in Limerick University. And they, you know, they basically overlook, so they are academic group of academics as well is involved in this. And they are looking at, you know, what laws are available, similar laws are available, you know, across the globe, which are the best practices. They produced, you know, different reports looking at hate crime, at different pros and cons of these different legislations. And they provided proposed legislation as well for Ireland. We also had presentation at the Oireachtas with the coalition, with groups, with victims who experienced hate crime from different backgrounds, talking to politicians about their experience and why, you know, they think that hate crime legislation would be good for them as well, and what was the impact of hate crime on them. Inner Ireland as well is currently finalizing its work on responding to racism guide, which will provide information From theory about racism and where it's come from, its history, its types, and it will go also into the information on how actually, on practical steps you can take if something happens to you. So, for example, how to deal with discrimination, who can help you if it happens, what are the advocacy group that can help you as well. But also it will provide information of step-by-step of reporting hate crime, how to report it, where to report it, what are the stages of investigation, what are the victims' rights, what are the organizations that support victims. And also it will provide information, for example, how to deal with discrimination in education, housing, health, and so on. So, you know, we probably will launch it early next year. So look forward to it. And, you know, just also the information there is focused on racism, but it can be applied to really any discriminated group, you know. So I would encourage people to visit our website soon as well.
So from what I can see, this has been called for at a European level as well. And you know, we were talking off air that I think you said Ireland and Liechtenstein are pretty much the odd ones out when it comes to not having specific laws to deal with this. So, and this is from a report that came out this year called The Life Cycle of a Hate Crime, which was commissioned by the Irish Council for Civil Liberties and a number of other academics. So it says, this marks the 10th anniversary of the adoption by the EU Council of the Framework Decision on Combating Certain Forms and Expressions of Racism and Xenophobia. Article 4 of the Framework Decision provides that for offences other than incitement to violence or hatred, member states shall take the necessary measures to ensure that racist and xenophobic motivation is considered an aggravating circumstance, or alternatively that such motivation may be taken into consideration by the courts in the determination of the penalties. So what's the delay? Where's our hate crime legislation?
Well, I don't know. So you see, the government has been reviewing. We actually have one law that, you know, it's incitement, prohibition of incitement to hatred act from 1998. And since the act has been established and has been put in place, there was hardly any convictions. So you see, the legislation in place is ineffective. And the government has been promising since 2000, I believe, the review of that act. And it hasn't happened yet. So, there was proposed members' bill as well on hate crime, I believe 2 years ago, but it hasn't been enacted. So I really don't know. What's the delay?
So as you say, like in the current legislation, there's not convictions being seen, which doesn't necessarily mean that hate crimes aren't happening. I mean, I think we know from stories we read in the press that they're on the rise all the time. But do the work that you do in ENR and other similar organisations, do you have any idea of maybe how prevalent or how common hate crimes are? Like, what kind of data do you have, or so how do you measure it?
Yeah, the problem is actually the problem with absence of hate crime legislation is that nobody is collecting data on hate crime. So the police are not collecting it, and who is collecting it is NGOs like ourselves. Like Glenn used to collect this data. Tenny is collecting this data on their part. You know, so it's on LGBT hate crime, and ourselves on racist hate crime. Also, Immigrant Council of Ireland is collecting data on racism. We, since 2013, we are running ireport.ie, where people can, witnesses or people who experience hate crime or any kind of racism, so it can be racism online, can be discrimination, can be graffiti, you know, anything racist that they experience or seen, they can report it anonymously on ireport.ie. So we produce reports of racism in Ireland every 6 months now. And for example, you know, what people report to us is only the peak of an iceberg. But for example, in the last report that covered the period of between July and December 2017, we've seen 256 different incidents that was reported to us, and 23 of them were actually serious assaults. So, and only, I believe, I have to check this, actually, that only, you know, one third of those were reported to guards as well as to us. So people, and also our report shows that people don't report to the police because they don't believe anything will be done with the case, you know. So that's that has to change.
It's double-edged. So people aren't deterred from committing the crimes because the laws aren't strong enough and people aren't reporting them because they've no faith in the system as it is.
Exactly. Yeah. And you see, even you might have, you know, really good policemen or policewomen who would like, you know, who would like to change it, who would like to act. But the thing is that the law is not on their side and system is not on their side, because if you, you know, if you don't have provision for hate crime, there is no supports even on the police side. They, you know, they just treat it as a regular crime. And, you know, they are not obliged to provide special treatment, if you want, you know, or special care for victims of hate crime.
I have one more question for you. We'll get to Owen and Alex there, who've been, in fairness, sitting very patiently. And just because you mentioned the online sphere as well, and I suppose a lot of the, you know, the hate speech and the harassment that we see obviously takes place on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, and comment sections, and that, and I mean, particularly in targeted at women and in relation to provision of refugee centres recently. So do you think that hate crime legislation would be possible to regulate the online sphere as well? Or is it a completely different question when you're talking about, I suppose, hate crime and hate discourse that happens on the internet?
So, yeah, these are two different legislations. You know, we recognize that hate speech usually accompanies the hate crime. You know, sometimes people make threats online and they move on to actually do something or hurt someone. And, you know, so the Incitement to Hatred Act could address that, you know, but hate crime legislation is about crime, is not about speech, you know, and hate speech is actually, it's a very delicate area, you know. We can see that it's on the rise, and it's not, it's very unregulated area.
And when does hate speech actually cross the line and become a hate crime, I suppose? Is that a grey area as well?
So, yeah, it's very, it's kind of, you know, so European Union, European Commission is working on kind of trying to define that, but it's very hard to define that. And also, there is a directive, e-directive on hate speech that social networks had to, I mean, they can voluntarily sign up to it or not. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Google Plus, they sign up to it. And, you know, we actually are part of the monitoring exercise where we look, when we every 6 months we monitor social media for the, and looking at the what's actually out there. We remove the comments or report the comments, and then we see what is the time of the response of social media. So how fast they respond to us, how they treat certain type of social, you know, comments, hateful comments, how long it take them to take it down, and if they take it down, why do they take it down? So, and also this we work on this as well with over 50 NGOs across Europe. So, you know, the kind of type of content really vary across the country, across countries. But, you know, we see that social media policy people, they start looking at their procedures. They start looking at their guidelines. What is hate crime? What is hate speech and what is not? And they are becoming more detailed, and they recognize the responsibility for what's going on their platforms as well, you know. So, for example, they, as a result, I believe, of that exercise of NGOs and European Commission working with them, is that they started recognizing that also, you know, racist symbols such as swastika or Celtic cross are also recognized as something that shouldn't be online. Or, for example, denial of Holocaust, which hasn't been included before, you know. So any kind of serious illegal hate speech is being removed, you know. And sometimes even for them it's difficult to define. They work with group of lawyers who are kind of trying to define what hate speech is.
Particularly in this era where it's all about, I suppose, what people interpret as free speech and people who are out to defend free speech. And and I mean, it sounds like you have your work cut out for a play. So we might come back to you, Aga, at the end for some closing thoughts, if that's okay. But I want to come to Alex and Owen, if that's all right. You guys have been sitting there very patiently. Thanks to Mill again for coming in. I suppose for our listeners, just so there's no skeletons in the closet, myself and Owen are pals. We would, I suppose, socialise a little bit, particularly during festival season and that. And Owen actually reached out to me and asked me would we take a look at the whole hate crime arena. So I kind of put it up to him that I wasn't going to be able to do it alone, and maybe asked him to if he wanted to come in. So thanks again, Owen, for taking me up on that offer. So
no problem.
I mean, I suppose just I assume you're going to kick us off then. I mean, you have a story to tell, and I'm sure some of what Aga has been talking about in relation to the laws that aren't in place at the moment probably strikes a chord with you, does it?
Absolutely, 100%. I actually learned quite a lot there that I wasn't aware of, so thank you very much, Aga. But yeah, this is not just my story, it's my story and Alex's story, both together and individually. And it's not just based around homophobia, racism has also come into play as well. Towards Alex, I am a white man, so racism doesn't typically affect me here. But basically, we've been a couple here for a few months. Alex is from France, and we met online, and I don't mind saying this, but I had never really been in a serious relationship before this. And so I wasn't really aware of kind of how widespread and open homophobia and hate still was, especially in the capital city, because I kind of felt like after I finished school some years ago that I kind of put a lot of my homophobic experiences behind me. But that's very much not the case. Given the immense strides that the Irish public has made in referenda of recent years, particularly the marriage equality referendum and the recent abortion referendum, it's very clear that the Irish psyche is very much progressing in a very interesting and progressive way. However, I think old habits die hard, and Ireland kind of has a reputation amongst its own citizens and abroad that there's casual racism and casual discrimination very much embedded in the society and in the public sphere. So basically, it became fairly evident that from the beginning of our relationship, we'd start holding hands around town. And that's like any couple would know, this is the simplest act of, you know, showing love. And it's not trying to rub it in anyone's face. It's just a simple thing that you want to do with someone that you care about. And every other couple, particularly men and women, are able to do this without any kind of repercussions happening to them on a daily basis. But the first thing I think we both noticed, and I think Alex can very much attest to this, was the staring. People staring at us kind of wherever we went. You'd have kind of even pointing sometimes on a Lewis or on a bus or in a public place. And then you'd hear the comments. Then you'd hear certain comments like, oh, that's disgraceful, or oh, God, look at that, or some more horrible things. And then the first time I think both of us remembered really, really noticing it was we were walking up Gardiner Street about 2 or 3 months ago, and a man walked by us and bashed into my left shoulder and said, "Get out of my face, gays." And that was kind of the first incident of direct homophobia I think I had experienced in the better part of a decade. I mean, I'd had, you know, the odd faggot thrown my direction throughout the last few years, but very, very, very rarely, because since 2015, I was one of the maybe naive people that assumed that if you were still homophobic after 64% of the public voted in marriage equality, that you would at least keep it behind closed doors. You wouldn't be so open about it. But this was very, very open, very aggressive homophobia towards both of us. And we kind of shook it off at first. We were like, okay, that's one incident, whatever. But then it started happening more and more. A few instances I can think of include, we were standing by the spire one time, was it?
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, and we were saying goodbye to each other. And these Italian men came by. I have no idea if they're residents of the country or if they're tourists or whatever. I had no way of knowing, but we knew they were Italian because they were speaking Italian. And they said the well-known curse word that everybody knows in Italian, that I'm not going to say here just for in case I offend anyone, but basically it was directed very much at us, pointing at us, very much in our direction as we kissed each other, and it was humiliating. It was really humiliating because it was in the most crowded part of the city, right at the center of everything, and everybody could see it, and there's no kind of guard or mirror up to protect you. But yeah, and then after this, it kind of became a lot more consistent, would you say?
I would say that it became to a point where we were trying to shake it off and just live our lives, but it comes back to you like it was once a week, twice a week, but it became at some point really hard to deal with because basically, literally, it was every day of the week. We experienced 1 week that was quite hard because every day it was, whether it was because of my color, because we were holding hands, or only because we were just talking to each other. It became like it increased in a way that we were not able to understand why. And I would like to go to thank you as well as Owen has did, because I didn't know half of what you said. So now I'm more aware and I feel more helped in a way, because, you know, like I'm from France, so I didn't know any rules about it here or laws. So I tried to like get myself into it. And thanks to you, I got more of an idea of what it's like and what we could do or not, which is helpful, because when you don't know, you just feel kind of alone and you're in a bubble and you feel like, you know, I think we both agree on the fact that we're still really lucky to be good health together, living in like our surroundings are really okay with everything we're living. So we're still feeling lucky, but like the point is that you don't know how much it gets you until it happens. And when it happens currently every day of the week, you ended up thinking, what am I able to do? And what is there something that can be done? So in France, for example, there's laws that allows you to go to the police or to the police station and talk about it. If you can like picture the person that had a hate crime over you or whatever, you can do something. So I needed your advice and I needed your information to get through a place where I know now what we're going to be able to do. But yeah, like, I don't know what my first point was, but...
If I may say, just in relation to that, relating to the whole topic that started this off about hate crime legislation, there's been a couple of incidences that I think really speak to what you were talking about, Aga, that have happened to us. Not physical acts of violence. Well, you might say someone bashing into my shoulder would be considered a physical act. But I think something much more, for me, scarring. And I do think that words often leave much deeper scars than punches, was that... a very recent incident. Myself and Alex had actually just gotten back from France 2 weeks ago. Last Monday, forgive me. And we were back at the city no less than 2 hours after we got off the plane. And we both decided to go for some food. And we were holding hands along O'Connell Street. And as we walked into an establishment, I heard this man and his friend standing at the entrance mutter under his breath, "Sick bastards." And me and Alex, every single time something had happened to us, whether we were shouted at to stop kissing or to, because we were told to stop holding hands because it made that person feel uncomfortable, each time we kind of got angrier and angrier. And this was, I think, boiling point for both of us. We had just gotten back from a nice little trip where we'd had a really, really nice time in a country that seems to be a lot more on top of its hate crime and its discrimination, and to come back and not even be off the plane 2 hours and have someone say that to you is too much. So I dropped my bag on the floor and I decided to confront this person. Maybe not the wisest decision, but I kind of went right up to him and I said, "Sorry, is there a problem here?" And he said, "What?" And I said, "Is there a problem here with myself and my boyfriend?" And he said, "There absolutely is. The pair of yous are sick bastards. I would rather die than breathe the same air as you."
This is disgusting.
So we both walked into the food place, and it takes a lot to kind of really shake me. Mm-hmm. Alex, amazingly, was really strong and really just head fast, and he was there for me the whole time. I, on the other hand, felt very fragile. My hand was shaking very rapidly and I didn't know how to respond. And while I was doing this, I looked outside and the man was still pointing in and laughing at us. And my hand was shaking so much, I said, "I can't stay here." So we decided to leave and we walked by him, and thankfully he didn't say anything to us again, because I feel like in the state I was in, I may have made a move that I would have come to regret. But But we went down the street, and before I knew it, I had burst into tears in the middle of O'Connell Street. Like, I just couldn't help it. It was just coming out of me. And it wasn't so much that his words affected me or my sense of self or Alex's, but what really upset me was that people feel empowered, not just like likely to say it, they feel empowered to say these things because of the world that we currently live in, a world where you can get away with this and no one could say anything to you. No one can arrest you for just saying these horrible, horrible, nasty things to someone and trying to, and in attempts to destroy who they are as people. And I just felt so kind of lost and I felt so powerless. And it was after this incident that I actually decided to contact yourself, Glenn, because I was sick of being the victim. And I felt like if someone doesn't stand up and actually speak to their truth and their stories, then nothing is ever going to change. Because like you said, Aga, there's very little data actually being collected. Yeah. There's like very little public record of, like, I would say the vast majority of the crimes or the discrimination that is happening. Like you said, amazing NGOs like yourself are really the only organizations collecting data, and yous are limited only by the resources you have at your disposal.
Yeah, so unfortunately, that's true.
It's just, there needs to be more done on both the national and international and also on a community level.
Yeah.
I feel like it's an issue that for the last two general elections, I feel like in this country anyway, has just really gone under the radar. I feel like the politicians, just they don't really care because they don't, well, one, how can they if they have no data about such things happening? But two, if they're not listening to those who are speaking up, NGOs, people, couples like myself and Alex, because I've seen the stories like the couple down the country who got beaten up by lads with a hurley or, you know, stuff like that. I mean, it's really scary that in 2018, nearly 2019 now, in a post marriage equality world, that I'm still scared to walk down my hometown streets and hold my boyfriend's hand, which really is the simplest thing in the world. And the main thing is that I feel like nobody out there is actually able to help us because of the lack of legislation in place.
And as you say, I mean, it's almost in the current Irish psyche, you're not, well, global psyche, that it's not only someone saying it as a throwaway thing. He sees it as his right to say it and his a defence of his beliefs. But, you know, obviously there's so much to untangle there. And I mean, the fact that you're saying that it crosses lines of, you know, you experience homophobia, but then, you know, there's a spectrum where it crosses into racism as well. And
absolutely.
It must be, I mean, I can't speak to that experience. I can only sit here and sympathise and say that's the pits and hope things get better. I don't know if you have anything you want to reflect on, having heard that story. Or
you see, I just you know, it's interesting that what you are saying kind of brings the echo of what all people who are, you know, contacting us are saying. And the thing is that, you know, people, like, by being white Irish, you can still be a target of hate crime. So, for example, you can be an LGBT person, you can be a person with disability, you know, so you can be a partner of a person who has a darker skin, or, you know, because people are being targeted, for example, women, by being, for example, a girlfriend or wife of Muslim men or black men. And their children who are, you know, multi-ethnicity children, they also suffer, you know, because actually you are kind of on the edge and you are not black enough to be black and not white enough to be white, you know. So it's kind of, you kind of don't get acceptance from both groups. So, you know, and as you said, with hate crime, you know, the hate crime kind of goes into the heart of the person's identity. So, you know, it kind of, the goal of the perpetrator is very often to kind of damage you as a person, you know, like to crush on something that you can't change, like skin color or the culture that you're growing up in or your nationality or your orientation, you know. So it's really, it makes really big scar in person's identity and their self-worth, you know. So it's not only about feeling safe anymore, it's about, you know, damaging who you are. And but, you know, I just wouldn't like to say that it's all that bad and there is no supports available, because there are, you know. And the fact that, for example, what we try to do in our island, and also all the kind of LGBT groups are trying to do, is to encourage people to stand up against it, you know. And even if you don't have, you know, courage or power, which is also not, it's not recommended to actually go and confront the attacker because that might put you in the further danger. But, you know, you can do something after, you know. So even if you report, if you are too afraid to go to the guards or you don't trust them, but we encourage people to go and insist for them to take a report, because if they have report, it stays there, you know. So don't let them trivialize, for example, your report, because sometimes they say, oh, come on, you're not beaten, you're not bruised, because it happened to me, you know. I was attacked just because it was like they tried to rob my phone. But, you know, my experience was that the guard said, oh, come on, you're not bruised. It's okay. Nothing was stolen at the end. So it's fine. And it wasn't fine because I was afraid for 3 months to go, you know, after 10 from my home. It wasn't fine, you know. So, and it has to be recognized that the victims have rights as well, you know. And as well, so there are certain provisions. For example, Garda stations have ethnic liaison officers. They have LGBT liaison officers. So if you don't want to talk to the guard, you know, in the window when you make a report, you can ask for the liaison officer to contact you. You know, there are, you know, there are helplines that people can call. There are reporting systems in place, even in NGOs, you know. So we see and we have accounts from people who told us that even making a report on iReport and telling someone about it was already cleansing process for them, you know, that somebody listened to them. So that's another thing. And, you know, there is TENI in terms of LGBT community. TENI, which is the transgender representative organization, they have a reporting system in place. We collect data on racism. And as well, if you, for example, were attacked on both reasons, I mean, because you are gay and because you have different skin color, you can report it as well to us and to TENI, and for example, you know. Other thing is that LGBT helpline are going to launch their reporting system soon as well, which is a good news for people, you know. So I would encourage you, once it's in place, to report all the cases that happen to you. In terms of if somebody is a, as well, in terms of discrimination, if people don't know that, for example, if you are in a shop, let's say Lidl, or if you are in a restaurant and a customer attacks you or say something to you, you might go, you know, instead of going to the attacker, you can go to the counter and say, listen, this person called me this and that. What can you do about it? You should remove them from the premises, because you see, and if they don't, you might then put the case to Workplace Relations Commission, because the management of that place is responsible to keep their customers safe. And if they, you know, if they fail, if you tell that you feel threatened by that person, you know, they are responsible as well for not taking action. The same is on the, so kind of some safety tips that if something happens to you on transport or in the premises, in some service, in, I don't know, in a bar, it's always better to go to someone in position to, you know, kick out that person from that place, or make sure that they are not going to say anything to you. You know, so for example, bus driver or security officer in a bank or whatever, you know, instead of putting yourself in further danger, you know.
Try bring this full circle, maybe with some kind of a positive note. And I just want to come back to something you said there, Owen. And I mean, I think there may have been a lot of naivety in Irish society that as soon as we voted to legislate for marriage equality, that all of a sudden we did away with homophobia overnight. I think increasingly we've seen that that's not the case, and that, you know, we still have, we need people in power, particularly to show leadership and to take further steps to eradicate that. But I mean, know for a fact, I mean, like, I'd like to think I speak for the vast majority of Irish people that it doesn't represent who we are. And, you know, I think most people listening will be on your side and sympathise with that. And it's probably scant consolation for everything that you've gone through. But just to genuinely thank you for sharing your story, and hope you can find some sort of peace of mind going forward. And hopefully that doesn't deter you from walking down the street and showing your love for one another.
Oh, never. Like, we still hold hands no matter what's happened to us.
Please,
whether
do.
It's been racist or homophobic. Yeah. We're not, like, there was a brilliant campaign in New Zealand about hashtag don't let go.
Yeah.
And it was a campaign over there to promote couples to never stop holding hands no matter what they experience. And that was quite a motivating thing for both of us. But yes, listen, thank you very much, Glenn, because it's important, like you said, that like the government needs to take leadership, and like it's people like ourselves, people like you guys, for helping to broadcast mm-hmm. these stories, and people like yourself in the NGOs, Aga, who are doing the, in my opinion, the real work of what the government should be doing.
Mm. And so, we've got probably an election coming next year. Like, so I mean, this is something as well. I think, you know, people post repeal, I think a lot of people became politicised for the first time, either through the marriage equality or the repeal the 8th referendum. You know, if politicians knock on your door, make sure you tell them, you know, like, what's your party's plans for dealing with this hate crime legislation? There should be votes in this. You know, sometimes it's the only thing to listen to, you know. So hopefully come election time, we can all follow Iarnáir's call and make sure that all the parties are listening, and whatever kind of a government formation we aim at next year can maybe progress this forward.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And just want to, I would like to add at the end, you know, we have, we've started a campaign called Love Not Hate, where people can sign the petition calling for hate crime legislation in Ireland. So people can go to www.inarireland.org and go to hate crime section, and they can sign the petition there. And at the moment we have 60 organizations who endorse our call for hate crime legislation, because it's not only our call, as I said, it's call of many, many more organizations, you know, who are working in the field, who are working with victims, who see the damage done by hate crime. And we would encourage everyone to sign it. And also to finish on the positive note as well, I would like to say that, you know, Ireland, we see the rise of far right and some really hateful agenda across the world. And we see it as well on social media in Ireland. However, we also see that Ireland doesn't have a far-right political party in place, which most of countries in Europe has, you know, and still there is a very, very strong opposition against that kind of ideology. And usually when there is, for example, launch of
Pegida,
for yeah. example,
you get chased,
you know,
away.
There is always a larger group of people who are coming to counter protest that, you know. Mm. The same is in case, for example, when somebody comes and try to protest against mosque or something, you always have a bigger group of people who are coming in support of the mosque.
Or like we saw up in in Donegal the weekend with the arson attack on the hotel that was going to store store is a horrible word, sorry, or to give refuge to people who are coming looking
for
asylum.
Yeah, to open that direct provision center. So, you know, it's always... It's very important as well that if you see something in the media, or if you hear about a story that really moved you, and you think that things like this shouldn't be happening in my country, you know, go on streets, join the protest, support the organization who is working on the rights of certain group of people that really matters to you.
Definitely.
You know, and even I would encourage, you know, LGBT groups to support anti-racist groups, to support disability groups, because we are all on the same boat. Mm. And, you know, we 100%. All support human rights, and we all support, you know, we support freedom of speech as well, but, you know, not the freedom finishes when, you know, hate starts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we should remember that. And, you know, as in discrimination, as in hate crime, it can happen to anyone, mm-hmm. and to really anyone. And you definitely know the person who it can happen to. Yeah. You know, person with disability, you know, person who is gay, lesbian, transgender, defines themselves as queer. You know, person who is from different country, you know, person who is from different religion than yours. It can touch someone very close to you, and you should do something about it.
That's all great, and we'll make sure to share all the information as well on the show notes on the website as well. I don't know, gents, if you have anything you want to share or anything to plug. We just sort of use this time at the end of the show to give people a chance to plug any activities or anything they're involved in, or if you write a blog or anything like that. Or
well, nothing relating to the topic at hand, so I don't think it's of much interest here.
No but problem. It was still good to be here and to know all what can be made. And I think like it's going from a victim point of view to someone who's doing empowerment person. Yeah. That's exactly what I think we were both looking for. It.
Yeah, and you see, nobody wants to be a victim.
Exactly. You don't want to feel like a victim of what you are, like, basically. So if there's something that can be done, then actually we're definitely going
to
do.
So we see, well done for you coming here and talking to Glenn.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Very important.
Both of you. Thank you so much.
I'm
delighted to have you all in. Thanks a million. I know I certainly learned a lot, and my blood pressure's boiling a bit over, but I think it's definitely a lot to be taken, that, you know, turn anger into action, into hope. So the way we usually try to end the show is we usually try to pick some sort of an Irish artist to give them a bit of a plug and that. So, I mean, just in terms of a track for today, I don't know if any of you have heard of The Villagers. I thought it might be appropriate to play Courage, just on the basis of the two of you coming in here sharing your story.
So
thanks a million, guys, for coming in, and hope you all learned something today. Thanks a million, folks.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thank you.
It took a little time to get where I wanted. Took a little time to get free. It took a little time to be honest. Took a little time to be me. I took a little lover. Took a little time to get over this, and from time to time I get heavy-hearted, thinking of how we used to kiss. Courage, it's a feeling like no other.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.